We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
98.7 K-Love, nobody plays more 80s. It is Miles in the morning. Thank you so much for waking up with us. By the way, it's such a gorgeous day outside. As a matter of fact, the person that's on the phone with us right now is outside and enjoying this beautiful weather. You hear the dogs in the background and everything. I love it. But let me give the proper introduction to this person. This is a very familiar voice in Dallas-Fort Worth in the history of Dallas-Fort Worth radio.
A somebody media personality. Fox hunting over here.
What's that?
I said somebody is fox hunting behind me.
Wow, okay. We've got one of the most familiar voices that you've ever heard on K-Love, and that is Jody Dean on the phone with us this morning. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, gang.
How are you?
Enjoying a cup of coffee and the sound of the baying hound.
You know, we were talking last week about little things, the little wins, and that sounds like a little win today, man.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think that when we get into times like these, every little moment like that of peace is valuable, and we have to kind of take what we can from those. And so, yeah, sitting outside on a morning like this is not a bad thing to do.
By the way, your show that you've got on CBS... really good job, man. You're doing excellent stuff.
Well, thank you. I've had to learn how to video edit very quickly.
Oh, you do that?
I do all that. All that out of the tiny house studio in the backyard. All the video editing, the hosting, the writing, everything is done out of the backyard studio.
Wow. Well, what you're doing is phenomenal. So great job with all of that.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to talk to you, Jody, mostly because, man, you're a history buff. And you know Dallas-Fort Worth history in times like this probably better than anybody that I know. And I felt like we needed to go straight to the source of someone who could really kind of put a lot of where we are right now, what we're seeing on TV every night, what we see on the news nationwide. But give us some perspective, you know, where your thoughts on are with that.
Well, you know, there's an old song by Peter Allen, Everything Old is New Again.
Yeah.
And... you know, there's so many cliches and axioms here that apply. I was thinking as I got up this morning, you know, America, in terms of age, is really a teenager.
Yep.
We haven't been around as long as we feel like we have, and especially at times like this, it's like we're very old. But the Europe, and you've seen roads that were built by the Romans, and you've seen the places where the English fought their civil wars, and, you know, you realize how much strife and how much turmoil went into creating a stable society. It kind of puts things in perspective, and so that's always been kind of, you know, that and the fact that I've always I was the child of school teachers. My mom and grandmother were educators. My dad thought he should have been one. You know, that always provides the context, I think, and that's part of what I've been doing on the TV show, is talking about during the COVID-19 pandemic about the lessons we could have learned and should learn still from the stories our parents and grandparents told us about the Great Depression and World War II and blackouts and food rationing, things like that. So, yeah, that's why I think it's important. If you don't know where you've been, you can't figure out where you're going.
We had a woman call yesterday. You know the White Snake song?
Yeah.
I don't know where where I'm going, but I sure know where I've been. And she
exactly,
she mentioned that yesterday. And it's like, you know, it's interesting to even put a song like that in the lyrics into that kind of perspective right now. But she's absolutely right. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like that right now, as we see what's happening all over the country, one of the things I'm I'm pleasantly surprised by is it does feel like that here in Dallas-Fort Worth, we saw the protests last night in Fort Worth with the officers kneeling to the protesters. We saw Margaret Hunhill Bridge last night, which was mostly peaceful as well. It feels like we're starting to get more and more into a peaceful mode with the way that we're talking about and handling everything with George Floyd. I feel like it was we got disconnected there for a second because of all the violence and the rage out there.
Well, I think there's certain amount of truth to that, but I also think that it's important to realize that the causes and the reasons for the anger that we see are long-term. And because they're long-term, the solutions are going to probably be long-term as well. And it begins with acknowledging things and understanding things, and most importantly, seeing through other people's eyes. You know, I did a video last night put on my Facebook page that kind of looks back on some of our history here in this area. Give you a good example of that. If you look at the Dallas levee system around the Trinity River, for the longest time, those levees ended just south of downtown Dallas. And the idea was to funnel all the floodwaters past the downtown business district, and then, you know, that would be saved. Except the people in Rochester Park and Cadillac Heights and Bonton had no levees. And if you got caught south of the Corinth Street Viaduct, you were on your own.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people like me who never experienced that probably don't understand the resentment that can come from realizing that the levees ended just short of where they could do you any good. You know, to this day, there are vast areas of Dallas where a mom has to get on a bus and switch buses about three or four times and spend 3.5 hours after work going to and from a grocery store where she can get fresh produce for her kids. And there are 3 grocery stores within 5 minutes of where I'm sitting.
Yeah.
And they not only deliver, but they'll bring the groceries out to your car. And we don't see those things. We don't think about those things. But if you live in that situation, you think about it every day.
We were talking about this a couple of minutes ago, Jody, and you may have heard, but we were saying, you know, hey, listen, I got black friends. Doesn't that make me cool? Aren't I good? Doesn't that mean I'm okay? I mean, since I feel like it's okay, I mean, I get along with my black friends just fine.
Right. If only it were that easy.
Right. So we've made such progress here, right? Isn't everything okay now? It's not okay.
No, it's not okay. You know, there's the old saying, oh, to see the world as others see it, you know, or see ourselves as others see us. You know, one of my most valuable experiences in life was playing football. And I learned early on that, you know, the only color that mattered to me was the color of your jersey.
Yeah.
And part of the reason for that was a young man by the name of Edward Newton. We knew each other in junior high and high school. And, you know, Edward, he was black. I'm white, of course. And, you know, we played defensive tackle. So he wore 75. I wore 74. And that made him Jethro Pugh. And I was Bob Lilly. We were both big Cowboy fans. You know, we used to have headbutting contests in the locker room that were epic. And it sounded like a couple of coconuts smashing into each other. I mean, we were Klingons. It was just stupid. You know, we were 13, 14 years old. And my dad, who actually was a George Wallace supporter. He was a George Wallace voter and would constantly tell me why desegregation was wrong and all these other sort of things. But my mom and pop still let me believe what I wanted to believe and grow up like I wanted to and think my own thoughts. My dad would still take Edward home after football practice some days. And I lived on the south side of Fort Worth in a really nice little suburban neighborhood, South Hills. And Edward lived off Rosedale. And Loop 820 through my neighborhood was below grade. And the freeway through Edward's neighborhood was above ground. And, you know, mine was very nicely landscaped, and you didn't see it. Traffic noise didn't bother you very much. But in Edward's neighborhood, that freeway cut through the homes in that neighborhood like a knife. And so, you know, growing up and seeing that, you went, wait a minute. How come my friend lives here and I live there? Why is that? And, you know, as you grow up, you learn about things like redlining and, you know, opportunity and things of that nature. And you realize not everybody has the same chance you do. And that stuck with me, and it stuck with me ever since. And that part of the reason for that, part of the reason that I think the way I think is Edward. And, you know, it's one of those things that I look back on, and I didn't realize what I was learning at the time, but, you know, I'm a descendant of Robert E. Lee. And I had family members who wrote for William Quantrill. And if you know the history of the Civil War, you know that's not something you want to put on your resume necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, by all accounts, my mom, I have a picture of my mom being held by a former slave who was owned by my grandfather's family. And, you know, you look at that, and we took driving vacations through the 60s, and I visited every Civil War battlefield I think there is before I was 10 years old. And, you know, it made an impression on me, you know, and the words that people like Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass spoke and invoked, you know, those things made an impression on me. And I was always encouraged to read and form my own opinions. And so when I got home from those driving vacations and my friends would choose up sides and we'd play Civil War, I picked blue.
Yeah.
And even though I was and am still a son of the South, I couldn't help it. I mentioned the levees a minute ago. It wasn't that many years ago, Rebecca. You remember we had the big controversy.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that statue of Lee there in what was then Lee Park kind of pointed over to State Thomas. If you remember, it faced the State Thomas area down there where the Freedman Cemetery is and the Walmart neighborhood market. Mm-hmm. Well, that area of State Thomas was back up until, I think, the 1940s, certainly in the 1920s and 30s, that was predominantly African-American. Mm-hmm. So if you went out to get your paper or go to work in the morning and you were a dad and you looked up from your porch, you know, we didn't have all the trees we have now. I mean, this is pretty much prairie land. But
you've got the symbol of Confederacy staring down upon you.
Staring right back at you. And so how I see that as someone who is a son of the South versus someone who sees that who is the son of slaves is vastly different.
I would say, once again, and he doesn't need an introduction, Jody Dean's on the phone with us, obviously, from Jody Dean and the Morning Team.
Yep.
Before we kicked off the Miles in the Morning show. And Jody, I was thinking about this, and here's what's interesting, and I was having a conversation, and we're going to talk with a friend of mine, Kenny, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, who I used to work with in Atlanta, 18 years ago. And Kenny and I were talking about this last night, and I said, man, I'm seeing things now I've never seen before, and I'm 45, and this is disturbing. Mm-hmm. And what's disturbing about it is that what's wrong with me that I'm just now seeing some of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I think what we do is we get too comfortable. Mm-hmm. We get too comfortable in the fact that we feel like, okay, we're okay. We're, you know, everything's fine and everything, you know, whatever. And I started thinking about just the difference in just daily life and the daily stresses of life and just what's different. This isn't just about what happened in Minneapolis with George Floyd. This goes far beyond that, and that's the reason that what happened in Minneapolis did happen is because we are not thinking more clearly about some of these things. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to throw out a word that's going to be an uncomfortable word here for a second. If I throw out the word slavery to any of us in this room, and Jody, you may see this differently considering your history, but we see that as a word in our history. We see that as a word that we read in our history books when we were growing up. We know that it was something that was going on way back when that doesn't happen anymore. But if I say the word slavery to my friend Kenny, it has a completely different meaning than it does to me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to acknowledge that. Like that needs, you mentioned acknowledgement a minute ago. That is part of what needs to happen right now.
If you think about how it works just in interpersonal relationships, I mean, if you're in a marriage and you don't acknowledge your partner's pain, how's that conversation going to go?
Right.
You know, and yet we don't want to take that micro example and turn it into a larger illustration. You know, there are more slaves on the earth today than there were in 1860. Mm. Slavery is a worldwide problem, and it still exists. And most importantly, it still exists in our psyche, in our imagination, even if we don't want to admit it. You know, I've talked to leaders in the African American community, and sometimes you'll hear people object to, you know, jobs and things like that being introduced into areas of town that really need employment and that sort of thing. And you go, well, why? Why would you do that? And it depends on what kind of jobs, because in many cases, some of those leaders see those jobs as nothing more than indentured servitude.
Correct.
Just another kind of slavery. You're working for the man. You're not seeing any benefit. The CEO's getting rich. The shareholders are getting rich. And you're working for minimum wage and you can't feed your family. So, you know, it's a matter of perspective. And you know, my view is, you know, Jeff, as an Army medic, as someone who trained in this, you know, and I talked to a Vietnam-era nurse, Patricia Walford, who went to Vietnam in 1965. She was 21 years old when she went. And I was talking to her. This is before the Battle of Drang Valley, you know, the first major engagement between the North Vietnamese Army and the American forces in 1965. And she was there for that. And when they bring the wounded in, very often they would not close the wounds. They leave them open. And the reason they did that is because they had to be sure that they got all the shrapnel out. Because if they didn't get all the, you know, the fragments out, then you'd face infection and amputation and, you know, possibly, you know, losing a soldier. And so they would leave those wounds open for several days and just keep packing them and packing them and packing. And I think what we try to do too often is we try to close the wound before we've cleaned it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started thinking, I've thought this for a long time, actually. You know, we're in this situation. We don't seem to be getting any better. You know, those of us who are old enough to remember the civil rights protests in the 60s and you know, Kent State and the Vietnam War protests and things like that, those were bad. You know, the Watts riot, that was bad. You know, there have been other horrible instances in our history, but we've just never seen it coast to coast in 20-plus cities all at once. So obviously we've been trying to close the wound before we cleaned it out. And so what do we do now? And this has become kind of my thing, I think. If we would just live up to the songs that we've all sung for I don't know how many hundreds of years, we could improve this a great deal. And I'll give you a good example of that. You know, we used to play just about any time I had an excuse to do it, I'd play Ray Charles' version of America the Beautiful.
Yeah.
And if you listen to Catherine Lee Bates' words in that and compare that to our hearts and what we think and what we feel, and this doesn't have anything to do with whether you're conservative or liberal or Republican or Democrat. I'm a lifelong Republican voter. I've always considered myself a conservative, but I also have a straight idea about what is right and what is wrong when it comes to my neighbor and my fellow countrymen and women. And Catherine Lee Bates' words were, "O beautiful, for heroes proved in liberating strife, who more than self their country loved, and mercy more than life. America, America, may God thy gold refine till all success be nobleness and every gain divine." You know, when we first started singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic, you know, way long ago in the 1860s, we sang those words, "As he died to make men holy, let us die to make them free." And over the last 60, 70 years of just do it, just win, baby, feed your thirst, you deserve a break today, all that sort of thing, those words evolved to, "As he died to make men holy, let us live to make them free." So in about 160 some odd years, we went from self-sacrifice to self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we get back to those words? What part of myself, emotionally, intellectually, do I have to give up in order to help men live holy and men live free? What part of me has to die to me in order for all success to be nobleness and every gain divine? And I think if we just live up to the words that we've all sung, we've all stood there with our hands over our hearts, and we've all pledged our lives and our sacred honor, you know, as the founders wrote, to trying to make sure that this experiment survives and succeeds, and not just for me and not just for you, but for your kids and my kids. I've got two grandkids now. You know, I've got a baby granddaughter. Well, she's not a baby anymore, but I've got a new grandson. And I think all the time about what kind of world I'm going to leave them. And my dear old semi-racist dad, who was wrong on that, but right about a lot of other things, always said, leave it better than you found it.
You know, I think that right there is what gets missed sometimes.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of people, and especially if you don't have children, you're not thinking about the next generation necessarily, because in your mind, you're like, well, I don't have kids. So, you know, once I'm done, then, you know, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because back in the people always point to the 60s and 70s as the time of change. The time of change was actually the 50s. The 50s, the greatest generation came home and the standard of living in America tripled.
Yeah.
And from that, you had a generation, my generation, the boomer generation, which grew up with an expectation that things were always going to get better. In fact, they actually started asking polls in the 50s about, do you expect your children to have it better than you did? Well, nobody asked that question in the Reconstruction or during the Great Depression. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
nobody made that assumption. And I think what happened is over the past 60 years, we've come to assume that things were always going to get better, and we closed that wound without cleaning it out, you know? And I think that that's been the biggest source of our problem. We think, well, the Civil War was fought 100-plus years ago. Yeah, it's all been settled. Well, no, it hasn't. Yeah. And until we understand that and recognize that and do whatever we can to open our hearts and our minds and our eyes, then this problem is not. But if we do that, if we can see through our other eyes and feel with other hearts, then all of a sudden this all changes.
I think, too, and we mentioned this earlier, and Jody, I'm sure you probably agree with this as well, that we can legislate this until, you know, to the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it starts with us as the humans, and you have to start it at home, and you've got to talk to your kids.
One heart at a time, and that's what makes this so damn difficult. You know, it's really one heart at a time. And, you know, when I left K-Love, one of the things that I wanted to do was teach. Mm-hmm. And I looked around and I thought, okay, you know, a lot of my colleagues and friends have gone to UNT and SMU and TCU, and that's great. But I picked, on purpose, Paul Quinn College.
Yeah.
I had met their president. He was inspiring. I thought, man, I want to work for that guy. And so it's a small school. It's about 800 students. They all have to work to pay their tuition. Most of them are from disadvantaged backgrounds. They don't have an automatic, you know, avenue into college. They've struggled, but they worked hard to get there. And so here they are, and, you know, they're taking speech and communications and, you know, digital storytelling and things like that. And I thought, you know, if I could use my experience to help give these kids some skills that enhance their opportunities and help them succeed, start a business, market themselves, whatever, then, you know, that's where I'm needed. And, you know, plus they plowed up their football field to plant an urban farm, and who does that in Texas?
Right.
You know,
wow. Really? No
so,
kidding.
You know, they're thinking imaginatively, creatively, and I've said for a long time that we're only limited by our imagination. And if we can imagine, okay, how would I feel if the only place I could get anything to eat was that corner convenience store and the best they could offer was pork skins, mm-hmm. and there's not a grocery store within 5-10 miles of me, how would I feel if I know my kids can't get a loan because of the way they look or fear for their lives simply because of the color of their skin when they're in a traffic stop, which should never be. And, you know, how would I feel? How would I feel if my ancestors had come over in slaves and not only come over in chains and not only then, but in terms of policy and politics and legislation for a great deal of our history since, been kept there? You know, how would I feel if I woke up every morning and saw General Lee staring back at me when I went to get my papers? Mm. You know, and just doing that and asking myself, how would I feel? You know, and I know that loses a lot of people who just don't want to hear it. I mean, I lost a friendship of 40 plus years this past week, because somebody said to me, well, we've heard enough about the black thing. Mm. And I couldn't believe I was hearing it. It took hearing it three times before I realized I can't, this is unforgivable. I can't deal with this. You know, I really can't. And it's not a black thing. It's a people thing.
It's a human thing.
It's a human thing. And having empathy. And I, you know, that's the big thing for us, is I think that because of our culture and because of our emphasis on a lot of different things, our ability to empathize with other people has been really hampered. I don't want to say it's been removed, because I think it's still there, but, you know, you still see it come out. You know, when there's a terrible tragedy, you see people of all kinds show up at the food bank or the blood bank. You see people respond when somebody's home burns down. They bring, you know, whatever they need to bring. Or when there's a terrible storm like Hurricane Katrina, you know, people just show up. They don't have to be asked. They just come out, and nobody asks what color or party or presidential candidate you voted for or any of that stuff. They just come out. And so, you know, you have those moments where, you know, it's kind of like the old barn raising. Nobody used to build a barn alone. Well, you see that still happen. And I think that is our nature. I really do. I really think that is our fundamental nature as created beings.
So
in the image of the Creator, I think what gets in the way sometimes is, you know, our wants instead of our needs.
You mentioned the word empathy, and I think that could be one of the most highlighted words of 2020 right now is the word empathy. Mm-hmm. It is something that every one of us, I don't care how much you have empathy, you need more.
Right.
And This is where the conversation turns very uncomfortable for a lot of people, okay? Leadership. Mm-hmm. Where are we with the empathy in leadership right now?
Well, you know, I've said this for a long time, and I hate saying it, but I do believe it's true. We listen to people like Al Davis say, just win, baby. Mm. And we listen to fictional characters like Gordon Gekko say, greed is good. And we listen to 50-plus years of messaging in our advertising about feed your thirst, and as I said, just do it, and just win, baby, and you deserve a break today. And we bought it. We took those things not only as advertising slogans, but mottos. And I think that sort of thing infected our thinking a lot. And so it's, what do I get out of it? You know, the biggest, for what bookstores remain, the biggest section in any bookstore is the self-help section.
Right. Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. And even in the self-help section, by the way, even that one has become very selfish, if that makes
sense.
Well,
yeah. Well, if you think about it, at the end of World War II, the Greatest Generation came out of that war, and the biggest publications on Earth were Life and Time. Mm. And by the 80s, the biggest publications on Earth, magazines, were Self and Us. And that reflects an attitude. And, you know, I think that whether you're discussing COVID-19, it's odd to me. Well, it's not odd. To me, it's purposed. But that's based on my beliefs as a Christ follower. I think that nothing happens that either God doesn't approve or allow. And if we're in the woodshed, there's probably a reason we made the trip. And I feel like we're in the woodshed right now. And I think, Chip Gaines posted something a few weeks ago about how this is really, all of these events have really clarified the difference in his mind, between our wants and needs. And I think this is a recalibration, and it's a painful one. Mm-hmm. And it's sad, but, you know, there's a reason why Jeremiah wept. He realized what the people were doing and what was happening and what was needed to get their attention. And, you know, it's one of those situations, and I don't mean to go all biblical here, but it's one of those things where you think, okay, how much of a lesson do we need? What we're doing has not been working. I mean, even in terms of the pandemic, you got people freelancing, doing what they want, not thinking of others. What kind of price do we have to pay for that before we realize we are literally in the same boat? And you shudder to think about that. You don't want people to pay that price, you know, like our children and our grandchildren for generations. I mean, and when I went to Scotland the first time, one of the things that struck me is that country, that area of the British Isles, fought a civil war over whether people should kneel in prayer or not. Now, that, when you think about that for a second, wait, what?
Yeah. It's mind blowing to even think that that's
a, So I think that whether it's the COVID-19 outbreak, whether it's the civil unrest that we're seeing right now, you know, I've said this for several months now. We've all talked about the Greatest Generation. I think that those members of that generation who are with us today and those who have gone on home would all, if they really thought about it, would tell us, well, this is your chance to rise to greatness.
There's no doubt.
And the question is whether we will or whether we won't. And I have faith, as depressing and despondent as even I get sometimes. I have faith that can happen. I have faith that we can do that.
Well, Jody, man, you've always got great words to say, man. Always, I'm fascinated.
Well, no,
I'm fascinated at your thoughts because you're a very thoughtful person.
Well, the words are easy. Living up to them is what sucks.
Well, and right? you know what, Jody, that makes us all the same. The words are easy. The living up to it, are we? Mm-hmm. Just are we? And I think
America
that's
the beautiful,
right,
man. Yeah. America the beautiful. We sang those songs. Now let's see if we met them.
Jody, thanks for your time this morning, man.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Y'all have a good day.
Enjoy your coffee in the sunshine this morning.
Well, I came inside because I think the dogs were jealous.
It's all good, man. Well, listen, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.